There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe. And yet again, we've got another busy show in store. As always, I'll be joined by former England fast bowler Steve Harmison to look back on the inaugural 100 as the Southern Brave win the men's title and the Oval Invincibles seal the women's title. We'll discuss what next for the format and how it might be improved. As well as that, we'll be joined by Southern Brave's Jake Lintott. We'll hear from Somerset captain Tom Abel and look ahead to this week's third test between England and India. So, plenty to come here on The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Well, Harmy, it was 3 years ago that the 100 was first launched. It was postponed for a year because of COVID. And now we've finally got our first sight of it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, jury's still out for me, if I'm brutally honest. I still can't understand why we can't play exactly the same teams with 2020. 2020 works. I have enjoyed it. I must admit, I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to enjoy it. And it was simple to understand. But where it fits in our calendar, where it fits in around the world with other people playing it and how we take it to the next level, I don't see it going, having too much mileage. I don't think you'll crack India with it. I don't think you'll crack Australia with it because T20 is working in them countries. But for a spectacle, I think it's really worked. I think it's enhanced the women's game, no end. And that for me is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And you've seen the way the women's game has evolved and moved forward in the course of the last 12 months to get to this point and to move on. I think is so valuable for women's cricket, and good on them for that. That's good. I just don't understand how we can't get this into 2020, because it's like I said, 2020 works. We've seen some superstars come from left field a little bit, but we've also seen some top players just show their class and get through. So the crowds have been good, the atmospheres have been good, behaviour's been reasonably good, and I think it has been a positive exercise. But I think there are a lot of negative things that have come with this 100, i.e. the scheduling, other cricket suffering, everything that goes with it. I think that's the next step for the ECB to get that in place. Because, like I said before, the mileage of it going around the world, I'm not so sure that will happen.
Placing the 100 in the middle of the season, I just think that new tournaments, new concepts need to earn the support of fans. This one seems to have been thrust into the middle of the season, thrust upon fans. You will enjoy this. You will love this. I feel sorry for the 100 in a way. I mean, I'm very conscious about being open-minded, but I feel sorry for the 100 because, if it was introduced less forcefully, maybe at the beginning of the season or at the end of the season, it would have had a chance, it will still have a chance to earn the affection, the respect, and eventually even the love of supporters. But, let's not nitpick too much. There are lots of suggestions around as to how the tournament could be improved. I'll start with a couple. 10 ball over. Bowlers must bowl a 10 ball over. They mustn't have the option of a 5 ball over. Maybe move or expand the Welsh fire. Call it the Western fire because the Southwest has been a bit marginalised, hasn't it? So, include Bristol and Taunton play games there. What about the women's game as always being the curtain raiser? Maybe have, you know, so the profile of the women's game has improved massively with this tournament. So why not have even some standalone women's games at the big venues? Your thoughts on any of that?
I agree with the standalone women's games. I think they could Friday night give them priority of, out of the 8 games that they play. I think they could play standalone games at smaller venues and big Friday night games at the big grounds, the Lords, the Ovals and places like that. Because I think maybe it's another year of the way it is, and then you can see how big the women's games evolve. Because I think they've done brilliantly out of this 100. I think standalone games, yeah, I think that could be a possibility. I don't have a problem with the Welsh Fire name being changed, but the other hand is, well, it is the England and Wales Cricket Board, so you know they've got to come in. Welsh Fire was rightly named, and it's played in Cardiff. So yeah, I understand you are alienating the West. The west part of the country, Bristol and Somerset and stuff like that. But get rid of the timeouts. Sound like Bumble here when 10 minutes after drinks, 10 minutes after lunch, somebody comes running on with a drink. I'm all for, just getting the game going. Because I don't think too many teams bowl their allotted overs in the 65. Oh, there are a lot of 100 balls in the 65 minutes. So that, you could do some of that. Asking a bowler to bowl 10 ball over and not having the option of 5, I don't see that working. I really don't. I think you have to have some sort of gap, some sort of break. It's a big ask to bowl 10 ball overs. And then what are you going to do? Just bowl twice. You have 2 10 ball overs. So you're not bowling very well. So you're only bowling one 10 ball slot. So I want the thing to evolve and get better, but there's some suggestions which are just out of this world, which should just not even be contemplated.
Okay, well, not surprisingly, Tom Harrison, the ECB chief executive, was not entirely effusive. I mean, he did accept that there were scheduling issues and that they would have to be looked at. He didn't provide any immediate solution. I guess that'll have to go to committee. But this is what Tom Harrison said a little earlier.
It's clearly difficult for us to prioritise everything all the time. And we have to, there are ways in which we can build better pathways for the players to get into Red Bull cricket in the lead into Test series. It's not a new problem, as I stated earlier. It's something that's been highlighted this year because we've had issues, because we lost the Test match at Lords, for example, because we had a difficult start to the Test series against India. But ultimately, I think this is it's a complex issue that we have to make sure that we take all of those views into the discussions that we have about the schedule. But it is, there's not a solution, a silver bullet solution that can solve all the problems that that a schedule will raise. And it's as much a problem for counties as it is for the ECB. So we have to get to a place where we provide those opportunities for players to get into good form and players to continue to play Red Bull cricket during a Test series when they're out of form. And that is not an easy thing to solve, but we're hard at work at that at the moment.
ECB Chief Executive Tom Harrison. And quickly, Harmy, there's also, there were some complaints that the men's game got a bit boozy. they got a bit rowdy. And even some suggestions that, alcohol sales should be restricted or even banned in certain parts of the ground, or heaven forbid, do what they do in Australia and serve that low alcohol stuff. The elephant in the room is that beer sales are vital to the economy of sport.
Absolutely. And I'm a drinker, so I'm going to want to go to an event and have a drink. That's just part of the fun and the ride of what this 100 is. And yes, if you had standalone women's games, the event wouldn't be on as long. But then would people want to go to an event that's only on, which is not as long? I think that's the Mario of it. You can have family areas where there's no alcohol, but I think if you banned alcohol, you just get idiots going to the local pub for 2 hours, drinking as much as they possibly can on an empty head, and then going to the ground then. So you at least you're giving them a chance to space it out and act half sensible. You just got to police it better. If there's issues, your stewards have got to be on the ball. You've got to police the thing better, police the area better, and make sure that if anybody is losing their empty head, you evict them very, very quickly from the ground. And that's just takes one to go out the ground for everybody else to look and think, well, I better behave myself because, you know, they're right on top of this thing. There's a couple of times in this 100 so far where there's people entered the playing field, and that would be concerning for me because as a sportsman, that area should be a no-go for anybody. And we are getting people going on. That for me is, that's got to be policed better. And there's many times in these games where I've seen people on the field, and that there could be a catastrophic, you know, thing happen to somebody if, you know, somebody wanted to make a name for themselves. And the players are the ones that are providing the entertainment. So the students should be better for that.
And just finally, back to this idea of the 100 catching on. I mean, I can't see it catching on anywhere else. And on a point of principle, you know, I mean, you know, the T20 format is highly successful around the world. And I would imagine that even if I was the BCCI or Cricket Australia or New Zealand Cricket, I'd be thinking, that's an English thing. They've made it up. They can have it. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the BCCI banned 100 tournaments being played. You know, they can ban whatever they like, the BCCI. They rule with an iron fist. I can imagine somebody starting a 100 tournament and the BCCI shutting it down.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't see this, unless the Olympics is going to take it, but why would the Olympics not take 2020? Because it's got, you know, the stat structure, it's got the structure of world cricket, all the emerging nations play it. It's going to be interesting to see how the ICC handle exactly what you've just described, because they're the ones that have got to govern the game. And if people start thinking, right, are we going to play 100? Will the BCCI put pressure on the ICC to make sure that does not happen? I can't see it outside England. I think I understand why they did it in England, because we needed a format where a franchise format sort of get around 18 counties. We had to change the game a little bit. I fully understand that. Does this then turn into a 2020 competition? And I agree with what we were saying earlier on. It hasn't been rammed down our throat. It's been so forcefully put by the broadcasters and the people working for the broadcasters, because some of it has just been sickening. I must admit, I've been throwing things at the telly, listening to people or, you know, looking on the social media, saying great this and fantastic that. Former teammates of mine, good friends of mine, and I'm laughing at them and going, you cannot believe what you're actually saying. You cannot believe what you're actually saying. But that's what they're trying to sort of ram home what the 100 has been. And, you know, look, good luck to them. But I don't see this happening anywhere outside the British Isles. And look, it makes a great showcase because people are going to watch it. But over a course of a 5-year period, it'd be interesting to see where this 100 stands in the world. 2020, we said the same about 2020, but people played it around the world. I don't see this getting played around the world. I just see it being an English competition. And you're right, I don't think the BCCI will even entertain the idea of touching it.
Just finally, the idea of the 10 ball over, of course, is to put more pressure on bowlers. So there's nowhere to hide. So if the wheels fall off and you've got to bowl 10 balls, there's nowhere to hide. The idea, of course, is to get more hundreds scored in the 100. So, yeah, more pain for bowlers.
No, absolutely, Manus. It's just crazy. And can you imagine if it was one of my 10 ball overs? We'd be here all night. It'd be about 15, 16 balls. No, get away with 10 ball overs. Just have fives.
Time now to look ahead to the third test between England and India, which starts at Headingley on Wednesday. As you will no doubt know, David Malan and Saqib Mahmood have been recalled to the test squad. Now, Harmy, it's bleak. It feels very bleak for England, obviously, doesn't it? So much time invested in Zach Crawley and Dom Sibley, and they've now been discarded. But you know what? I remember the 90s. England have been in worse places than they are currently. They're only 1-0 down. But goodness me, you know, we try and train ourselves to look on the bright side, to be optimistic. But Cho Root and Jimmy Anderson aside, it's quite difficult, isn't it?
Absolutely, Manus. Absolutely. You look at the list of players that are not going to be playing in this Test match, and it's frightening how good a side we've not got in the team. So I look at this setup, and I think there's a good setup there, and we've got some exciting young players who probably just aren't playing to their maximum potential, who are potentially not having the right preparation to give them the best chance to fulfill and execute their skills. I'm talking about red ball cricket. And we can go on about structures and, you know, I can be sound like a broken record, but you look at this India side. We've never once said they're underdone. We've never once said their bowlers are not, or maybe they're short of a gallop and need another game before the first test match. India have been in this country for 8 weeks. They've been in here preparing. Yes, they played against New Zealand, the World Test Championship. They were underdone then, but they've prepared and got ready for red ball cricket. And you look at this India side, they were ready for England. And we have now brought a group of people who, between four or five of them, our batsmen, that we're expecting to score hundreds. One of them, we had one innings between them, one first-class innings between them this year, and that's David Milan, who got 199, I think it was, for Yorkshire. But there's five or six players who have played no cricket, red ball cricket at all. So that is our problem. Apart from the test matches, but that is our problem. And that is our problem. We cannot get... So it's all well and good. And I don't want to sit here, and I've sat here for too long in this chair over the course of the last 3 weeks saying, you know, his head position was all over, his balance was shocking, it was poor shot, all that stuff. You've got to step back and have a, as a former professional cricketer, and give these kids a little bit of, not a leeway because you're playing international cricket, but you've got to have an understanding that this is what's happening. They're not having the best chance to prepare for a test match and have a string of innings together for over a longer period to make sure they're in a position to sort of be top test players, because we're going backwards and we'll never get better if we keep not so much discarding Sibley and Crawley and all that, but if they're not playing cricket and facing red ball, they're not going to perform very, very well. And that's the problem we've got in this country at this moment in time.
I remember very clearly the outrage, the horror that there was before an Ashes series down under when England only had two warm-up games. Because they used to have three or four. And then more outrage in the 2000s when they had just one warm-up game. And a couple of years ago, when England went to Sri Lanka, they had a two-day open net. It wasn't even a game. Do you remember? They played one day batting, one day bowling against a makeshift team. And now, as you said, that 199 David Milan made was on June the 3rd. It's 7 weeks ago. And now he's being brought back into the England team as a saviour of the top order. Do you know what? I initially thought, how much pressure must he be under? But I've changed 180 degrees now, because I think this must be the ultimate nothing to lose innings for David Milan. I mean, he averages 27.8 in 15 test matches. That was 3 years ago, the last of those test matches. So, you know, he's 33 now. He may well be in the best form of his life, but he thought that his test career was gone, I would imagine. I should think that, having become the number one T20 batsman in the world, he thought his test days were over. But he's got absolutely nothing to lose. You know, I mean, if he makes a pair, it'd be a shrug of the shoulders and say, well, that's what Zach Crawley and Dom Sibley were doing.
Yeah, and it is. And that is a worrying thing for me from a former player, that a player goes in, you're picking a player who goes in thinking, I've got nothing to lose. It should be everything to gain when it comes to your test match career. But like I said last week, whoever England picked about at number three or had to bring in, it had to be an experienced player. You know, they had to bring a David Milan or a James Vince into this group, because nobody has been playing red ball cricket. The whole country's not been playing red ball cricket. So we needed somebody who had played a lot of first-class cricket, who was experienced enough to take the experience of disappointments, but also the pressure of being in that and have a lot of experience to call back on when, you know, when chips are down in the cauldron of the battle of test match cricket. And that, for me, had to be an experienced first-class cricketer, because if you chuck a young kid in and say, oh, go on, you've got nothing to lose, and have a go, you could scar him for the rest of his career, facing the likes of Shami Bumrah and Siraj and Ishant Sharma. So I think they had to go back to an experienced player. I would have gone head to tails, either one, Vince or Milan, to bat at number three. Yeah, look, it's a little bit of a free hit, but should we really be in this position? This is the England cricket team, and this is, for me, why we're talking about the 100, the problems, 100 the negative side of the 100 has given us, this is one of the negative sides. The structure of English cricket is completely shambolic, that we are going back to a 33-year-old who averages 27 because the simple fact is he's played a lot of first-class cricket and we're drawn on experience and not having somebody that's just banged 200s out in the last 2 weeks and facing a very, very formidable India side. So, look, I feel sorry for David Milan. I feel sorry for the England batters because they're not getting, you know, the chance to sort of have the preparation time and to go into a test match feeling, you know what, I feel great. I feel as though I'm seeing the ball like football. I'm leaving the ball well. I know where my off stump is, know where my scoring shots are. I don't think anybody in this England side other than Joe Root has confidence of where his off stump is, where he's leaving it or where he's hitting it.
Okay, talking of Joe Root, this was the England captain talking a little bit earlier.
Hey, Joe, good to see you. Given what's happened this summer with the injuries and your dad with the off-the-field stuff and on top of being in a COVID bubble, I just want to ask, how are you? How are you dealing with staying positive and keeping that enthusiasm?
I'm playing for England. I'm playing Test cricket. It's quite easy to stay positive in that respect. You know, I'm living my boyhood dream. And I think constantly we're trying to remind myself that as well when we are having the odd tough day or things aren't always going in our ways. When I was 10 years old, I couldn't think of anything else I wanted to do. So I think living that boyhood dream is one way that you can constantly keep motivating yourself to front up to the next challenge and the next day. Look, I'm not going to lie, it's the last year or and a half, it's been challenging for everyone involved in it. Even like these press conferences, not being able to sit and have a conversation with people, to do it over Zoom, it's not ideal. Everyone wants to get back to doing things how they have been, but you've got to manage it as best as you can. You've got to find ways of dealing with certain scenarios and aspects of this current climate. And I'm a cricket tragic at heart. I love the game. I love batting. So every opportunity to try and do that, I'll try and take.
And just how beneficial has it been to have some time off after that Lord's Test, just to take stock and go again ahead of a huge free test match just coming up?
Yeah, it's been huge. I think everyone's really enjoyed that opportunity to go home and, you know, be present with their families, have their own space again and just have a sense of normality, get away from cricket a little bit, get away from that sort of pressure environment and come back refreshed. So it'll certainly serve as well coming into the rest of this week.
England captain Joe Root. Now, let's talk about Saqib Mahmood, because, you know, the amazing thing is that, similarly to David Milan, he's being brought back in because it looks like he will play in the absence of Mark Wood, but you can speculate on that. Interesting thing is, he made his debut a couple of years ago when he was only 22. I mean, he's only 24 years old, but here's the stat that shocks me. He's only played 22 first-class games. And here he is. I mean, he's not going to be leading the attack, but he's going to have to carry quite a burden. So another question is work rates. I mean, he's been bowling 20 balls.
That's it. It's crazy. It is crazy. It's madness. You're asking bowlers to run up and bowl 25 overs out of 110. When it comes to bowlers, talk about these red zones. You know, these red zones are going to be so highlighted. It's ridiculous because of, you know, you're going from bowling nothing to bowling. You're going to ask a kid from bowling 20 balls to bowling 25 overs over the course of 2 days or a day and a half. Because if India get in, England will field for 120, 130 overs. Now, you're asking the likes of Anderson, who's 39, Mahmood, who, as like you said, 20-odd first-class matches, been bowling 20 balls, Overton's been bowling 20 balls. Then you've got to balance your side. Your side changes. Your structure of your teams changes as well, because in an ideal world, I'd leave Sam Curran out, bring Ollie Pope in, strengthen the bat and bat Butler at 7, Mo and Ali at 8, and pick 3 seamers. But you can't. It's not possible because you're asking Jimmy Anderson to bowl 35 overs. You're asking Mahmood, if he plays, to bowl 30 overs. You're asking Robinson to bowl 30 overs because, you know, in the first innings, because if you lose the toss and you field first and Moen doesn't become as effective, you're asking your seamers to bowl, rotate and bowl a lot of overs. Now, you can't do that because of the way England, the way the calendar structure is, because our bowlers have not bowled enough. So that impacts Joe Root's decision at the top to pick a team which is well-balanced, which is to get 20 wickets and potentially score 480, 500 runs to win a test match. And it comes back. It'll all come back to this, the calendar structure and bowlers not being prepared enough. But again, I find myself trying to be critical in decisions that are made on the field, but fully understand how they're getting made on the field by what's happening to the cricket, the structure of the cricket off the field. So again, we're going in a circle of talking about, you know, preparation and things not being ready. Mark Wood got injured. It was an accident. It was a freak accident. You know, in the field, fast bowler shouldn't dive. Yeah, you know, that's what size 12s are for. You know, if your size 12 can't stop it, it's four. You let it's gone. You know, you do not knack your body doing that. But comes back to the fact that our test team has not been given the best chance to be the best test team it possibly can be. And if Saqib Mahmood plays, great, over the moon for the kid. But boy, are we asking too much of some of our players.
Injuries have been a massive part of this series. But it's how a team adapts, isn't it? I mean, it was really interesting to see, I'm changing subject slightly here, but Cricket Australia Chief Executive Nick Hockley defending Justin Langer, saying that his record was very good this year when he had all the players available. But surely the mark of a good team and a good coach is how well they adapt and how well they are able to succeed when they don't have everybody.
Yeah, and then that's been England's trouble of finding substitutes to fill the gaps which are not firing, and that's the top order basically. I think we've found enough in the bowling department, whether it's, you know, Broad and Anderson or Broad with Anderson with, and having a well balanced attack. Spin department's a bit threadbare, but good to see Moen back. Our middle order, I think our middle order is fine. We've got two very, very good, two or three wicket-keeping options, which are very, very good. We've just struggled at the top of the order, one, two, and three. And them are not only the key positions, but yeah, especially in England, when the ball moves around more than it would in the Southern Hemisphere. And I think that is something that we need to address very, very quickly. And first-class structure doesn't help because, you know, we keep playing at the start of the year on wickets, which opening batsmen don't really stand a chance on. So, you know, fingers crossed somebody will come out of the latter part of the Bob Willis Trophy. But when you look at the Bob Willis Trophy, again, you know, it starts the day after this next test match finishes. So really, in theory, there's only two 40-day games where we can get any players that we feel as though, especially if this test match, in between this test match, the four players that don't play in this test match go and play in the Bob Willis Trophy and try and get some sort of form to push the players that are in. And I'm talking about Sibley and Crawley as well on that, because again, we need our structure to be better, because it's not helping us develop opening batsmen or key positions for this team to go forward. And the rest of it seems to be in decent competition for places.
And the problem is, another problem is that with the conference system, if you're not in Division 1 and you're in Division 2 or Division 3, then you're effectively playing for 7th to 12th place or 13th to 18th place. And you have to wonder about the intensity of the cricket in those games, to be honest. Anyway, you're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Next up, we'll hear from Somerset captain Tom Abel and speak live to the Southern Brave left-arm wrist spinner Jake Lintott. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can listen back to the podcast now available on the Following On feed via the free TalkSport app. Delighted to say that a little earlier today, I had a chat to Jake Lintott after that brilliant performance from the Southern Brave, lifting the inaugural 100 title. Jake, I know that you've been asked a lot about this. You've been doing a lot of media in the last couple of days. This incredible story and your journey to inaugural 100 champion. I guess it's all sunk in. I mean, you're 28 years old. You're not 18 anymore. But the dream carries on. You're now going to go and play in the Caribbean Premier League.
Yeah, no, it's been an unbelievable last sort of 15 months or so since signing for Warwickshire to play in the T20 last summer, to signing my first 3-year deal with Warwickshire, and then to get picked up as a wild card, and then, you know, to win the tournament and go so well. It's sort of, yeah, it's hard to get my head around. I'm still sort of riding the wave at the moment, just trying to soak it all up. But it's Saturday night was definitely the biggest highlight of my career so far, and it'll be there for a long time, I'd imagine.
Let's just rewind a bit further back, can we, to 2017, when you made your Blast debut for Hampshire. You then had a spell with Gloucestershire. It didn't go as well as it has done in the last year or two. Did you give up at that point on your dream of playing professional cricket?
I think initially, like in my head, I'd struggled to process that rejection because I'd done pretty well and I didn't feel like I'd done a lot wrong. So that was tough to take, obviously, when Gloucester said that they weren't going to keep me on, having done really well in the second team and in the 3 games I played. So, yeah, it was a frustrating time, but I think naturally it's how you come back from those. And I managed to come back pretty strong from them and find some inner self-belief. I've always believed that I'm good enough. And it was just a case of someone else having that belief in me, really. And luckily I found that with Warwickshire, and without their support and sort of backing, I wouldn't be where I am now, I guess.
What is it about wrist spin, and particularly left arm wrist spin, and T20 cricket, the shortest format, and 100 cricket? Because virtually without exception, every champion team has a wrist spinner.
Yeah, I think the good thing about us is generally we take wickets just because we're that bit different, and we spin the ball both ways, and it makes it a little bit harder for batters to line up potentially. So yeah, I think most good white ball sides have a wrist spinner in there, which is great for us obviously. But yeah, I think we're seen as attacking options and someone who can potentially change a game. So that's obviously, when I'm playing, that's my plan, is to try and take wickets and try and impact the game in that way.
You took 15 in the Blast, didn't you, and another 11 in the 100. How do you react when a batsman gets hold of you? Because that happens. I mean, do you just back yourself and go, that's fine, you can hit me for 6 because I'm going to get you out next ball?
Yeah, I think I'm learning to deal with that a bit better as I've played more and more, really. I think initially it's just you struggle to deal with that sometimes, and that can affect your whole bowling performance in general. So I've tried to be, I've tried to play the game with a smile on my face. I think everyone's seen how much I've enjoyed playing, and I think that ability to sort of park getting hit for six and focus on that next ball has been key. And Mihaela Jayawardene has worked with me on that, and feel like every time I get hit now, I can come back strong, which obviously I did quite well in the last game on Saturday to get Mo in that last over.
Your lot has been said about your arm speed, because you're quite quick through the air, but you spin it as well. You're sort of left arm version of Rashid Khan.
Well, I don't know about that. He's an absolute wizard. But yeah, I do try and bowl with decent pace. I think actually I've started to bowl quicker as the tournament's gone on, just through learning. And yeah, I've tried to get my paces up a little bit, just because if it's spinning both ways at a quicker pace, then that makes it more challenging for batters. So yeah, you watch a lot of these wrist spinners who do well around the world, and they tend to bowl with quite good pace. It just makes it that bit harder to line up, I guess.
One of the things that frustrates me about the sort of casual supporter is that they have this assumption that when a spinner has a man caught on the boundary, he's lucky. That's not true. I mean, it's just not true, is it? Because particularly as a wrist spinner, and sometimes you can drag one down, but it's still spinning so far away from the batsman, you have him caught at point.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's a common misconception, and actually we set fields to get hit to those fields, and we'll bowl deliveries to certain players to try and get them hitting against what they want to do, really. So no, definitely, obviously there's times where you'll bowl a bad ball and it'll get hit to deep mid wicket, but that can often be as a result of the doubt you've put in the batter's mind from previous delivery. So obviously I'm going to say that as a spinner, but yeah, we'll take them however they come, really. But I think the build up to those dismissals is often the key.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the quarterfinal coming up. How's your preparation going for that?
Yeah, so I've got a couple of days off now just to switch off and spend some time with my family. I haven't seen them for 5 weeks or so because I've been based in Southampton. So just trying to switch off and get away from the game a little bit, which is good. And then I join up with Warwickshire on Wednesday, and we'll train Wednesday, Thursday, travel to Kent, and then play Friday. And then yeah, so we'll be prepping for that. I think the whole squad are in, so should be. I'm really looking forward to seeing the boys. Obviously, I've not seen them for 5 weeks, and it's quite, you get a bit of separation almost. So it'll be nice to see them and catch up with them.
Director of cricket at Queen's College in Taunton, have they been good enough to put that position on the back burner for you? They're going to keep your seat warm, because you're going to have to give it up, I assume.
Yeah. So yeah, the plan is very much for. They've been brilliant to me, I must say, throughout the whole time of in the last year. They've given me a lot of flexibility in terms of playing my cricket, and to have employers that are so accommodating and willing to sort of support you on a journey has been really key. The cricket has obviously gone really well, and unfortunately the two roles won't work moving forward. So yeah, I'm stopping that role at the end of this school year. Well, at the start of September, and that will be someone else's role to take on, but I'll still be very much involved with the school and coming in and coaching where I can. I love my coaching, and I owe a lot to that school because that's where I went to school and they helped me on my journey. So I'll still be giving back to them and trying to get down as much as possible to help the next generation coming through.
Okay. And spinners developing late, a lot do. And I've often had the impression that English cricket's not very good at sort of coming to terms with that. You know, I mean, you're 28, and you know, it's that's young.
Yeah, I've touched on it in a lot of interviews I've done. I feel pretty strongly about it. The county setup does not allow for late developers. It doesn't allow for people to come in at 23, 24. Like, I was ready probably in terms of performing like this 3 or 4 years ago, and just couldn't get an opportunity. So I've had to keep pushing that, and to get it now obviously is special, but I feel like I had a lot more to give and could have started earlier maybe. And that's something that I think the ECB and counties need to look at, is how they can keep people on their books and keep developing them, because we're not at eight. I coach a lot of kids, and you see them develop at different ages through their teens, but then to be making a decision on someone at 18 years old saying they're good enough or not is, in my opinion, crazy. And yeah, I think the ECB should try and look at ways and trying to keep those guys in the game for longer, because once they go out of it, it's very hard to get back in.
You're going to be in Barbados in 10 days' time. How's that feel?
Oh, how good. I can't wait. it's icing on the cake, really, for this year. It's has come about obviously through good performances, and I feel like I'm ready for that opportunity. But you know, to play in a big franchise league in the Caribbean, it's not going to get much better than that at the moment. And that's, yeah, I'm really excited, looking forward to joining up with the team. I've heard lots of things about the CPL. Sounds like plenty of fun. And yeah, I love playing cricket and enjoy my cricket, so it seems like a good fit for me.
You got international ambitions?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I make no sort of... When I joined up with Warwickshire, Mark Robinson made it pretty clear that, you know, we've got to have ambitions as players and we've got to try and, you know, fulfil dreams. And I'm doing that at the moment, but at the same time, I definitely believe that I can play at that level. Obviously, I'm 28 and I've come into it quite late, but I still feel like I've got something to offer and I'm that bit different and I'm the only left-arm wristspin in the country. So, you know, I'd love to do that. It'd be a dream come true and I definitely believe I can do that.
You've given a lot of people a lot of pleasure and you are proof that dreams do come true, Jake. Many, many, many congratulations. Well done.
Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Right, time for a change now and time to hear from Birmingham Phoenix and Somerset batsman Tom Abel, who's been speaking to TalkSport about the success of the 100, the legacy it will leave and what it's like to play alongside Liam Livingstone. He's been speaking to TalkSport's Scott Taylor.
Yeah, naturally, obviously, from a personal point of view, it's frustrating being out injured, but equally it's been brilliant being around the group. We've got a great group of guys and obviously the team's done really well. But of course, you know, as players, everyone, you know, wants to be involved. So much excitement around the competition and, you know, I think it's generated a huge amount of interest and people have really got into it, which has obviously been a massive part of it.
Looking back today, there's a story that over 100,000 kids have got involved in cricket this summer alone. Do you think the 100 has played a major impact in that?
I think so. The way it looks is that, you know, the 100's had a massive influence on the interest and obviously every game's been televised and there's been a real buzz around it. So I think, yeah, it's got so many kids into it, which is obviously great. And, you know, hopefully that next generation will sort of, yeah, want to start playing cricket and get involved. And, yeah, it's just a great thing for the game. You know, hopefully the game will grow and, yeah, it's been a brilliant tournament from that point of view.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about England needing its own franchise tournament. When you look around the world, most of the major test playing nations have their own franchise tournament. Do you think this can hold its own as a format? Because obviously the T20 Blast is a lot different and there's a lot of people very sceptical about the format itself. But do you think this can sort of propel English cricket to the next level?
Of course, yeah. I mean, I think sort of domestic 2020 cricket is thriving as well. But obviously the 100 is a new concept, a new product. And in terms of sort of what it's done for the profile of players and cricket in the country, it's been massive. So, yeah, I guess the overriding, obviously, hope is that it will grow cricket as a whole in the country. And, you know, hopefully county cricket will thrive as a result also.
And let's talk about a man who's had a brilliant summer. Didn't quite get you over the line in the final, but that's Liam Livingstone. I mean, 92 not out, highest score of the 100, of course. Just how good has he been over the last 6 weeks or so?
Oh, I mean, he's been unbelievable. To be honest, I sort of didn't realise he was as good as he is. Obviously, playing in the South group, don't see a huge amount of the guys in the North group, but he's obviously been a real leader for us. You know, and the way he strikes the ball is phenomenal, so... Yeah, long may his form continue, that's for sure.
And as a captain yourself, he's obviously made that step up to captain the franchise with Mo going back into the test side. How impressed have you been with his captaincy as well?
Yeah, I mean, he's been sort of very impressive from a number of sort of different points of view. You know, we obviously had Moeen as captain at the start, but Livy was still, you know, quite influential. He's a real sort of leader within the group and obviously... The way he's performed has been huge for us. So look, it's been obviously great for us domestic players to sort of be involved in a different environment and get to know and get to play with different guys. And yeah, it's been, you know, the Birmingham Phoenix has been a great team to be a part of. And yeah, it's been brilliant.
And you look at the white ball options that England have at the minute, it's quite frankly ridiculous. But having been around Liam in the last... 6 weeks or so, do you think he has what it takes to get his name on the plane for this World Cup this winter?
Without a doubt, yeah. I mean, he can't do any more, can he? You know, the way he's sort of taken his opportunities when he's played for England this summer, and obviously he's really stepped up in this competition. I think he's comfortably the leading run scorer. And yeah, he's really sort of taken it upon himself to lead from the front with the bat. Yeah, but equally it's been, you know, there's been a number of sort of contributions throughout the team, which I guess has been a sort of hallmark of our success in this competition.
Birmingham Phoenix's Tom Abel there, who's tipped Liam Livingstone to get on the plane to the UAE this winter. Let's have a look ahead to the T20 World Cup, as we'll be doing over the next couple of weeks. I assume, Harmy, that Liam Livingstone has now made himself indispensable. He's inked into that squad, I presume, is he?
Yeah, he's in it for me. Now more so than if Ben Stokes doesn't go. He could be valuable in that middle order. I think what he's shown especially in the 100, is that, you know, he can play on the big stage. You can play on the big occasion when the crowd's there and the atmosphere's there. The challenge for Liam now is for me to get into that number five or number six spot for England in the test matches. I really think, you know, I watch him and I don't want to sort of put any comparison towards Kevin Peterson, because I don't like comparing eras. I don't like comparing people with people that played before. But I look at when Kevin came into the England cricket team, the level of expectation, not only on him, but the way he performed, seemed to make him better. And it looks as though Liam's got a little bit of that about him, that when he goes into the bigger stage, it seems to be, look, they're here to watch me. I'm performing here. I'm gonna show these. Because I watched that final and I thought, you know what? I want to see him go against these quick bowlers. I want to see him go against 90 mile an hour. I want to see him go at Lords in front of the big stage. And yeah, let's see what this kid's about. Came out with a helmet cam on. And I thought, ooh, I just wonder if Mother Cricket might just work here against Liam Livingstone. And when he hit that first ball out of the ground for six and he kept doing it, I thought, ooh, like what I'm seeing here. Not because he was hitting the ball out of the ground for six, but his temperament and the way he went into the big game and the big stage. And that's the way, I mean, by what Peterson did. When Peterson came on the stage, it was all about Kevin. Nobody else bothered. Nobody else mattered. It was all about Kevin. And I thought, ooh, that's a bit like Liam here. I'm quite enjoying this. And I just wondered if his next step in development is, can he go and play a test match cricket and bring that to the middle order? But Livingstone, for me, goes T20 World Cup. And I think over the course of the next 12 months, I'd like to think we'll be still sitting here and, you know, doing the Cricket Collective and talking about Liam Livingstone having a very good summer for England and test match cricket in that middle order, because I think that's the development going. But I think he's proved he can play on the big stage, and, you know, I think he'll go and do well in the World T20.
Livingstone's a better filthy spinner than KP, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, yeah. Yeah, he seems to have a similar sort of thing with the haircuts and the colours and stuff like that, so that's a bit concerning, but... No, I've really enjoyed Liam Livingstone in the last this cricket season so far. I think he's proved that his career's on an upward spiral, and I'd love to see him want to play test match cricket, and I'd love to see him bring swagger into the middle order for England, whether he bats at number five or number six. I think he could go out there and do what Kevin did and perform and bat that way in test matches, because it's different when you bring a one-day player in to go at the top of the order. It's a different animal altogether with Jason Roy. I think Jason Roy was set up to fail from the very, very start. But going into the middle order, I think he could do and adapt that. And if he goes and has a good 2020 World Cup, if he finishes off and he has another, you know, his career path is going in the right direction, he seems as though he's got the temperament to play on the big stage, and good luck to him. I've really enjoyed watching Liam Livingstone perform over the last sort of three and a half months of this cricket season.
And back to fast bowling, Harmy. Has Tamil Mills done enough to force his way, certainly in contention for a spot in the England T20 World Cup squad? What have you made of his form?
Yeah, I think he's bowled brilliantly. I think he's bowled fantastic. I think he has a chance. I think he has a slim chance, but he has a chance. England struggle at death bowling in white ball cricket. And I think that's just not just 2020, I think that's 50 overs as well. So with no Archer, I think Mills would be a very, very good substitute for bowling at the death. It's whether England can fit him in, because they've had players so far in their T20s and their 50 over competitions that have done very, very well for them. So I think it might bowl to whoever's, you know, from a fitness point of view, the likes of Mahmood and Wood, whether Wokes is going to be fit for the World T20. But he's he's done himself no harm. He bowled brilliantly in the semi-final, the eliminator. Is it the eliminator? Bowled brilliantly in the eliminator. He got 3 for 8 off 16 balls. And then he bowled well in the final. He didn't go for many runs. His slower ball change-ups are excellent. His Yorkers were on the money and quick. And he's got these bouncer is slippery. So, you know, from somebody who can only really bowl four overs, from a body can detect somebody that's got body issues to play 3 or 4 games in a short space of time, that would be the challenge and the test for the selectors. But I don't think he's done himself any harm. I think he's been excellent for the Southern Braves in the 100.
Well, you're not the only one who rates him, Harmy, because James Vince had this to say about Tymal Mills.
In my mind, it would make sense of Jofra not being available, someone that can bowl, you know, 90-odd mile an hour and has got the change-ups that he has. He's also, I think, improved. Not that his batting would get him picked, but, you know, in the field, I think from a few years ago, you used to have to hide him. He's more than capable in the field, and he can actually slog a few with a bat now. But in terms of his primary skill, his bowling, I mean, to have the change of pace that he does, to be able to bowl 90-odd mile an hour and then the skill of the slower ball and the accuracy that he's got with it makes him incredibly tough to face, I think. So it's the first time I've been in a team with him and seen him game in, game out. But yeah, he's been so reliable. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he wants. So he's very easy to captain. So yeah, hopefully he gets a nod.
What about Josh Butler now? He's not going to the Butlers that are expecting their second child. So he's not going to the IPL. And speculation seems to be gathering momentum that he's the first who will withdraw from the Ashes if COVID protocols and quarantine conditions, etc., in Australia don't allow him to be with his family.
Yeah, and I can understand that. Joss seems to be a very private person. He's somebody who has put a lot on family, and I'm not gonna criticize him for that. If Joss Butler decides, you know what, if my family can't go to Australia, I'm not going, I'd be 100% behind him because I'm a family man myself. I know what it's. I've seen both sides. I've been on the Ashes trip with my family, and had the heartbreaking decision to make to stay and not come home for my wife giving birth for the second time. I can understand where Joss is at, and if he does that, look, you've got no criticism for me, especially after he's pulled out of the IPL. He goes and plays World T20, comes home, has Christmas at home. The only thing he's doing is he's possibly given up, or given a chance to somebody to take his spot, because he hasn't had the hundreds or the runs that he should get at number 6 or number 7, or his talent has at 6 or 7. So if he doesn't go and Bairstow takes the gloves and does well, then it's going to be a big fight for Joss to get his test match players back. But these are decisions you have to make. And if you're making them for the right and family reasons and right call, and you stick by them, then good luck to him. But I think I've always had the feeling that it probably was Butler who was going to be the one that would be pulling out first, because obviously the Butlers are expecting, for the second time, and everybody wishes them well. So, you know, good luck to Joss if he makes that decision. You'll never get any criticism from me for it.
Hold the back page. Breaking news. Cricket Australia discover that Justin Langer is passionate, angry, volatile. It's hilarious, isn't it? I mean, he's a great man. You know, anybody who knows JL knows he's a great man, but he's capable of great anger as well. And, you know, he doesn't suffer fools gladly. And it seems that he is struggling with the players, or the players are struggling with him, I should say. The worst thing is that all the leaks that of this volatile relationship that he has with the change room, it seems to be in the media every day at the moment. And then there was that weird statement of support from Nick Hockley, which sounded more like a condemnation. What do you make of it all?
It's madness, some of the stuff. Even Kawaja's YouTube thing was just, I was sitting there, I only watched the first about 45 seconds of it and I switched it off. I thought, this is crazy. Look, you know, like we mentioned earlier, Australia got a fantastic side when they're all available. Like, that's what the chief executive says. Justin Langer's a fantastic coach. He is a great man. Alfie's a top man.
who I had a lot of battles with. I had a lot of battles, probably more battles than any other opening batsman. And that was even before I played for England. I remember having a big standoff with him in the middle of Lords when I was about 18 years old. David Boone stand in the middle of us, sending me back to my mark from bouncing, yeah, Langer, and Langer came at me big time. And I didn't know back. I was brought up from the northeast of England. I went back at him, and it was like this street fight in the middle of Lords with nobody watching because it was an empty Durham against Middlesex. And from there, I've always had a decent relationship about him because he actually spoke nicely about him and me in the press. And what you've got, especially you mentioned the leak stuff, but if you're going to have a documentary on a TV, on a program, or on one of the streams, you're going to have leaks because you're going to have millions of people knocking about. And then all of a sudden, you're going to have if you've not got any sort of editorial preference on what goes out, you're asking for trouble. I know one thing. If somebody had gone, you've got this fly on the wall documentary in the England cricket team when I was playing, I'm not sure you could have been your own person. And then that would, you would get little fractions everywhere because they don't want to speak in public because you don't know who's listening. And I think that causes more problems than anything else. But for having somebody, a passionate coach who loses his temper every now and again, well, didn't do Sir Alex Ferguson too bad when he won all them trophies for being somebody that was passionate and forceful and trying to control and look after everything. And I don't think it's going to do the Australian cricket team too bad because sometimes you have to tell people the truth. And if they don't like it, then they go whinging about it and they moan about it and they're weak, then you're not going to get the performance out of them, or they're not for you. So you quickly move on. So no, I think there's a lot of nonsense about the JL stuff, and it's great to see from an English point of view, but having passion as a coach, I'm sorry. I thought that would be in the job description.
Right. It's time now to hear again from Somerset captain Tom Abel. And with the T20 Blast quarterfinal and a county championship on the line, he's been looking ahead to the season run-in and discussing his own England hopes with TalkSport's Scott Taylor.
Looking ahead to the next 10 days or so, you've got a T20 quarterfinal and then the run-in for the county championship. So I guess that's something that you'd have to adjust to.
Absolutely. Yeah, obviously, a huge amount to play for at the back end of our season. Not sort of looking too far ahead. Obviously, that quarterfinal against Lancs is going to be huge for us. And obviously, they've gone sort of really well in 2020 cricket over the last few years. So it should be a cracking game. And then, yeah, equally, the championship running, I think it'll be very tight. But obviously, a lot to look forward to for us, that's for sure. And obviously, a lot to play for.
And let's talk about the championship for now. You mentioned it there, 635 runs in 8 matches, averaging 63.5. I think it's the third or fourth best in the country. Now, with what's happening at the moment with England Test side, the problems with the top order is well documented. Do you look at the next 6 weeks and maybe think about seizing a chance to break into that England team? Because obviously you had experience with the Lions, let's not forget.
Not really, to be honest. I mean, the first thing I would say is, those guys playing for England, they're the best players in the country, and they've performed so consistently for a long period of time, and Test cricket is tough and they're all top players. So I guess my sort of focus now is obviously just trying to, when I go back to Somerset, try and perform, try and help the team win. And look, I as captain, I guess you sort of want to be leading from the front, and that's where my sole focus is. Yeah,
I guess at 27 now, you're probably coming into your peak years. Is that something? Do you have a target for sort of England in the next couple of years, or is it just a case of take it game by game?
100%, yeah. I'm sort of not really someone that likes sort of thinking too far ahead and getting carried away. I just try and sort of worry about the next game, which I know is obviously a little bit of a cliche, but yeah, I think it can be dangerous if you look too far ahead. And I just want to get back to Somerset and try and perform and help the team win. Yeah, that's all I'm sort of worrying about at the moment.
And one man that's coming back to Somerset is Jack Leach. He's had a bit of a frustrating summer being left out of the Test squad. So have you spoken to him? And obviously England's loss is Somerset's gain in this county championship running.
Yeah, absolutely. We're obviously, gutted for Leachy that he's not quite sort of been given the nod in the Tests. But, for us, we'll just be, hugely excited to have him back at Somerset. He's such a central figure in our dressing room, and he's very popular amongst the group, and obviously he's a world-class sprinter as well. So It'll be great to have him back at Somerset. Of course, we want to see him sort of representing England. You know, he's performed so consistently for us, but, you know, ultimately that's in the selector's hands. But I'm sure, you know, Leachie's a very grounded guy. You know, he just wants to be playing, and I'm sure he'd be very disappointed that he's not playing for England, but equally he'll be excited about the challenges back at Somerset, I'm sure.
And just finally, thanks for your time this morning, Tom. The news that Azhar Ali's coming back to Somerset for the season running. As a captain as well, just how big is it to have that international experience of someone like Azhar, not only as a batsman as well, but that sort of senior head that can potentially help you as captain too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Azhar's a dream overseas, to be honest. The way he sort of conducts himself and, you know, how he commits absolutely everything, you know, to the cause. And obviously he's a world-class player himself, and we obviously had him at the club in 2019, and it was a no-brainer really trying to get him back for the run-in. Obviously a huge amount on the line for us, and, you know, having someone of Azhar's class is only going to help us, I think.
Tom Abel's one of those cricketers, Harmy, whose graph has just got up and up and up. I mean, you know, there's, as a general rule, he's got better and better as the seasons have gone on. Do you remember he was appointed Somerset captain at 23, I think he was.
Yeah.
He was, wasn't he? Yeah. But he's a very, very fine man. Good, good cricketer.
Yeah, he is. And he's somebody who Somerset could have gone the easy route, and they had some experienced players, just as Marcus Truscothick was finishing, the likes of James Hildreth. But they went for Tom Abel, who looks as though he's got a decent head on his shoulders. And again, he seems every year you look at the first-class averages and the runs and you see Tom Abel at nearer the top. And he never gets talked about playing for England. He never gets talked about. And a bit like a James Hildreth. You know, James, I played a lot of cricket against James, and another one that just slips under the radar, doesn't get talked about playing for England too many times over the course of the year. But at the end of the year, you look at the averages and the runs, your cumulative runs, and you think, wow, he's up there again. He's got another 1,000. He's got 900 again. So he's done brilliantly leading Somerset nearly to the championship, I think, would have been for the first time in the last couple of years. They've been very, very close. And they've got some good players down at Taunton. Yeah, again, we're not talking about somebody who's playing for England here, but has had a very, very fine first-class career and leading a very, very good county.
Right, last 20 seconds. Rate England's chances of coming back to win this Test series.
They've always got a chance. For me, they've always got a chance because they've got a bowling unit that can take 20 wickets. Score runs, got a chance of winning the series. Don't score runs, no chance of winning the series. Jimmy Anderson is so key to this group. Now, Broad's not fit. They can get 20 wickets. It's just a case of can you 1, 2, 3 get runs? Simple as that.
Thanks, Harmy. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can listen back to the podcast, which is now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week to look back at the third test and look ahead to the fourth. But for now, you've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.